Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the last session before lunch. My name is Ben Cronin, and I'm the editor of Sport Business International. We've got a fairly broad topic for this final session and quite a diverse range of speakers, so I'm hoping I can bring all of the threads together. There are two themes that we've been asked to explore. The first theme is we've been asked to talk about China's strategy of creating an 800 billion sports sector by 2025. And we're going to discuss how Asian economies are developing through events. On the other, we're going to introduce you to some of the new creators of owners and creators of sports events and discuss what it is and how they're building those events from the ground up. For this reason, I thought we could, to make this more exciting, we could treat this like a live networking session and see if we can broker some deals between our Chinese investors and our Western sports properties. So on the panel, on the far end there, we have Dr. Keith Harris, who is board member for Everton Football Club. I believe Keith has, at the last count, has brokered upwards of 32 different deals between football clubs and outward investors, so he knows a thing or two about attracting foreign investment. Second along, we have Dong Wang, who is the vice president of Ali Sports, which, as I'm sure you're aware, is the sports division of the e-commerce giant Alibaba. They've been making a lot of waves in the world of sport recently, since their inception relatively recently. It was the end of last year. They've done deals with FIFA and also more recently with World Rugby. Then next along we have Eric Wolf, who's the managing director of Red Bull Air Race, which is an interesting example of a sponsor creating its own sports property rather than sponsoring a sports property that's already in existence. And last but not least, we have Claire Ballard next to me, who's the regional marketing director for Feld Entertainment. And that's a company that creates live touring family entertainment experiences. If you have a young daughter, I'm sure you're familiar with the Disney on Ice event. They also do Arena Cross and an event called Monster Jam. So to start, Dong, I'm wondering whether or not you can sort of paint a picture for us about China and this ambition to create the 800 billion sports sector. What's driving that and... you know, where's it going?
All right. First of all, thanks for having me here. It's my first experience to be in this lovely city, even though it's a little bit cold. And yes, indeed, actually, I do feel it's pretty cold outside. However, the warmth inside here, the enthusiasm is definitely strongly felt. As far as the overall picture, I believe it is the spring. We try to describe it as a spring of Chinese sports industry, if you will. The president, Mr. Xi, has been very supportive. Yes, indeed. His support definitely has galvanized the whole surroundings, if you will. And it is there. However, it really is the beginning of the fast growing development of sports there in China, which is so sizable. In many areas, we're still a beginner, we're still a learner. And the idea, of course, is to really galvanize people, and given that China is Beijing for the second time is going to host the Olympics this time, the Winter Games, though, we feel that we have to really contribute a lot to raise the awareness of sport, the benefits of sports, and if you will, and to make people of the country be more involved in the sport, the beauty of sports, and also enthusiasm should be there. And as far as Alibaba, which is Alibaba Sports, my company, of course, is a newly founded one. It's just about 1 year old. I think our slogan is to make sports simple. So, and also, in other words, we try to make sports simple to make it accessible to most people in China, and also make them feel they are actually, they could be a sports person. So, in a nutshell, the sprint is there as far as sports industry in this country, and I feel it's just that we have a long way to catch up, you know, with the rest of the world. And sometimes things could be overrated, sometimes things could be, or prices could be inflated, and then we try to be more rational, if you will, down the line. And we, as I said, it's a long learning process.
Okay. Keith, football has been a big beneficiary of all of this interest in growing sport in China. Do you want to talk about the recent TV deal for the Premier League over there? And I mean, there's obviously advantages for football clubs like yours, Everton. Are there any disadvantages as far as you can see?
Good afternoon, everyone. Now, I don't think there are any disadvantages. What is encouraging is that the first toe in the water stepped by China was 3 years ago. And it was a pretty modest price they paid for the acquisition of the rights to broadcast Premier League games exclusively in China. But having dipped their toe, they're now well in the water up to their neck. The increase of this deal that will be offered from the 2019 on season in comparison with the last deal is an increase of over 11 times. That's very substantial. It's in the order of $700 million over the period. It more or less matches what the United States are paying for broadcast rights. And I think it's a symbol of how seriously China is taking this sport, which is not entirely surprising when the president says that sport, for which read football, is one of the three planks after agriculture and energy that the long-term growth of China will be based on. So it's not entirely surprising. There are some other aspects. China is obviously trying, when I say China, I mean entities of the Chinese state and private sector are attempting to buy soccer clubs throughout Europe. That's beneficial, at least.
I was going to say, even though we're still struggling with our national team's performance, to try to even qualify for the next World Cup.
Yes, but it's little by little. You see, when you've acquired all these rights, when you've acquired all our players to play in China, when you own all our teams, then maybe you'll have a chance.
Well, from your mouth to God's ears, I hope these things will actually work together. But right now, sadly speaking, it's not quite there yet.
And I can tell you, as someone who stands in the middle of all this, I'm very happy that you should be doing all this. But, I think, in seriousness, China clearly has a long way to go to demonstrate that it can manufacture a team that can challenge for winning a national team. But equally, we were just talking earlier, President Xi's vision is that by the year 2050, which, looking around at the audience, some of you will enjoy. Some of us will be in the twilight of our enjoyment, should we say, that there would be 50 million people actively playing football in China. Now, that's broadly the population of England today. It's a tiny percentage of the Chinese population today, let alone what it will be in 35 years' time. But make no mistake, China has made its noise, and it will be a louder noise in the future.
You alluded, Keith, there to having to compete with the Chinese Super League over players. That is. I mean, when I asked, you know, advantages and disadvantages, I mean, that's a problem for you now, isn't it? That you might be losing players to China.
It becomes a problem if the Chinese clubs start bidding for the younger players and they can be persuaded to go and play in China really at the meat of their career rather than at the end of their career. I think whilst the Chinese clubs are relying on the experience that seasoned professionals bring, it's actually a godsend to European clubs. Because one of the issues they have is that they've invested in players at the age of 29 to 30 to 31. They're beginning to slow down, they're beginning to mount injuries, and if they have cost a lot of money in the first place, how actually do you ever see a return on that investment? And here is China willingly taking some of the more mature players, bearing in mind that players can still play now until they're 34 or 35. And they are, and so that's actually quite welcome. The issue comes when it's a 25 or 26-year-old that a Premier League club is prepared to pay very substantial wages to, and a Chinese club is prepared to pay two or three times that level of wages.
Okay, Eric, just remaining with sport, I want to bring you in here. I mean, we've talked a lot about how the focus in China is on football. Do you think there's a place for your event, for the Red Bull Air Race in China? Have you tried and to create an event there, and what have you found?
Good afternoon also. Possibly I should explain what the Red Bull Air Race is, so most of the audience possibly don't know it. But it's the most unique motorsport taking place in a third dimension, very close to the spectators. We can do it in city centers like Budapest, for instance, or on a famous horse racetrack like Ascot, or in a motorsport venue. And of course, the idea was to do it on iconic places where the spectator oversees the whole race from the start to the finish line, which is different to most of the motorsports where you see just a fraction of the track, some 500 meters. So the spectator can oversee the whole thing. And we had an amazing success as of now. It's a young sport, started in 2003. 2005 became a world championship and is now in the 10th year of competition. And after the relaunch in 2014, we accumulated now year on year, we have 2.5 billion media contacts. So it's not bad. It's not compared to where we want to be, but it's not too bad. And of course, we tried to race in China, but it's not an easy ground to explain what we are doing. So there's a kind of development we should wait for in general aviation. But this is taking place, and we made some contacts. There are interests, especially in the region, southern part of China, in Zhuhai, or close to. We have also been in Shanghai and also in Beijing. But we have to wait a little bit until the government sees that we are, let's say, flying safely, and this we can prove.
Okay, Claire, I want to bring you here in here, and sorry for leaving you till last, but I wanted to talk sport first and then bring in where you come from entertainment-wise. Eric introduced his event a little bit. Do you want to say what Feld does, the sort of breadth of events that you produce?
Sure. Good afternoon, everyone, as well. So Feld Entertainment, so we are the largest licensee of Disney, and we are the largest family brand entertainment in the world. So we produce Disney on Ice, we produce Disney Live, which is a stage show for really small children, about 0 to 2 years old. We own Motorsports, so underneath that umbrella, we have Arena Cross, Supercross, and Monster Jam. And then we also have our own Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus. We also just launched Marvel Universe Live in Europe this past couple months ago, 2 years ago in the States. And we just announced a partnership with Sesame Street Live for the domestic state store for right now. So family entertainment.
Family entertainment. So in terms of operating in China, and I know you're not the country representative for China, but could you tell us a little bit about the picture for Feld Entertainment over in China?
Yeah, so we've played 35 cities with Disney Live there, which is probably the most of any Western entertainment company entering in China ever. We also just expanded from 3 cities to 5 cities with Disney on Ice, and we're looking to play Monster Jam for the first time ever in May of next year.
Okay, so Dong, when you listen to that, is there anything you think that Ali Sports can bring to these properties you've heard about here? You have a massive audience in China. You have the Alibaba e-commerce platform. What can you do for Western sports properties to help them in China?
I guess, as I mentioned, the company itself is not even fully fledged. It's about 1 year old. I think initially we used the sentence that we want to be the fundamental or sports or base platform for China's economy. And now, after about a year, we feel that we could really reach out more so to say we're going to be the base platform for the global economy, a sports economy, if you will. I think we'd like to, as you mentioned, leverage with our sizable e-commerce platform, which is the forte of our parent company, to reach out more in the sports industry, more than just being a sponsor, if you will. At the very beginning, it's true. We everybody probably here knows that we sponsor the CWC, namely Club World Cup in Japan, which is about to start for this year's event. I think we want to be more than just a sponsor. We want to be really more disruptive in this field, if you will, to be able to team up with a lot of international sports organizations, federations, associations, if you will, and to do to create more IPs, more events, and more events related tourism and it's a total package, and to get more people basically involved in the beauty of sport, and in addition to that, we could actually get them on board to if you will buy things to actually to monetize our long-term missions. But overall, yes, as you mentioned, the e-commerce platform is definitely is something that we can leverage with.
So in the case of World Rugby, you've signed a 10-year deal with them. Can you just tell us what your plans are, how you're going to create events around that deal, mm-hmm. And how you're going to monetize it?
Well, it's a 10-year deal, as Jack Ma used to say that, when we are with him, he tends to ask us questions such as, what do you see 10 years later? What do you see actually down the line? If you tell him what's going to happen next year, whatever, he probably won't be showing that much interest. So I think it's in terms of that deal, it's a 10-year deal. It's about $100 million US dollars and divided by 10 years. And from the grassroots level, we work with our Chinese Rugby Union as well to start from the very beginning, the grassroots level, to get more people at the high school level and also college level to be involved in this particular sport. Perhaps also, as we know, the Chinese national teams at different levels are not strong in this respect either. So that also is something that we try to build step by step to make them feel they could be on a par with the rest of the world or some other powerhouses could actually compete down the line. But I think it takes, it's going to be a long course. But before we even reach this target, I think we'd like to utilize this deal to get more world-class participants or retired or legends, active players involved, and all the relevant people, relevant parties involved, to really raise the awareness of this sport, to make people feel they are actually they can really appreciate the beauty of this sport. So it's a long-term mission. I mean, as I said, it's a 10-year deal. So, I think we're trying to do the best we can as far as this particular deal is concerned. Yes, a lot of money involved, but I think we do have the patience, and by the same token with other deals and other missions, if you will.
Okay, Keith, I mean, in a lot of cases, this investment is also about acquiring expertise as well, isn't it? Where Chinese firms are trying to sort of learn what we know about creating sport events and monetizing them.
Yes, the media cover the involvement of China in football heavily. And a lot of the focus living in Europe is inevitably because Chinese investment is seeking to acquire, as we discussed earlier, clubs over here. But I think that really is very superficial in comparison with the true meaning and the true objectives of acquiring clubs here. It is, Ben said, it's to acquire the expertise that's been learnt over years and years and years, the playing expertise, the coaching expertise, and also the commercial expertise. And make no mistake, the investment that is going into China mainland by Chinese to improve their game with the vision of trying to obtain a World Cup, to host a World Cup. They did a very successful Olympics 10 years ago, 8 years ago, whatever. So it wouldn't be the first, but then not just to host it, but actually to have a chance of winning it. So when you're asked questions about what's your vision for 10 years, I think that's all understandable. And I come from an industry now where, as we discuss matters, I would ask people on my board, what's your short-term vision? They say, well, if it's a Wednesday, the short-term vision is what happens to the team on Saturday. I say, okay, so what's your long-term vision? They say it's what happens to the team the following Saturday. So that is the vision of the people who are running football today, and that's not just in England or Scotland, it's the same throughout Italy, France, Germany. And here is China, whose economy until quite recently was run on a command basis, so there was very long-term planning, being translated into the commercial success that China is trying to create for itself. But the long-term vision, the long-term planning is still absolutely paramount.
Add one more sentence, and I just want to say that I cannot agree with Keith more as far as this subject, really. And a lot of Chinese brands, a lot of Chinese entrepreneurs, when they are acquiring clubs overseas, including in those in Italy or in England or in elsewhere in Spain and so forth, even in the second division, third division, I think we'd like to try to advocate the fact that They shouldn't be myopic, if you will, and it has to be a long-term vision, because if you just want to advertise or promote your brands, maybe that's a fast cash flow very quickly, or turnaround for you to get your name or brands out very quickly, well known. On the other hand, if you can really do the long-term, bear this long-term vision there, concept there, in return, these actually acquisitions can come back to help China, help the grassroots level, at a grassroots level, clubs or schools and individual teams and so forth, to grow the sport of soccer. That really is something more rational, and that's something I think people tend to realize in China more so than ever. Even with the general administration of sports, they feel they will encourage in that sense to say, let's bear that in mind. You might get some quick cash, however, the long term is that really that's something you need to do to help the country. That's something we try to really work on.
Okay, Eric, that's quite a reassuring message, isn't it, that these Chinese investors have a long-term view in a lot of cases. How willing would you be to sort of cede control with something like Red Bull Air Race, take sort of advice from investors in China, and also allow them to localize your content and change the formats, for example?
Yeah, no, definitely. We are interested to race in China and to cooperate with the local people there and the investors. And of course, we are also thinking long term. Right now, we are running a qualification camp in Spain for new pilots, and there is also a participant, a Chinese pilot based in Hong Kong, who takes part in this qualification. And this is also one element. We want to have local heroes. And in order to promote the aviation in general and the aviation industry, we know that, for instance, that in the next 10 years, there are going to be investments in the reach of 12 billion euros in infrastructure, aviation infrastructure, not only the airline business. So this is another one. And with our sport, we attract people coming in touch with aviation, and it's a high-tech sport. And this means that we are creating a kind of we are in a supportive role for the growing Chinese aviation industry, aviation business in general with airlines, and also infrastructure and airports, etc. And the general aviation, as I mentioned, is also growing. So this, we are bringing people to this kind of sport.
And you've established that you have an audience in China as well,
right? We have a big fan base there. For instance, we are running a so-called mobile game working on Android and iOS. You can download it for free, and there have been since the creation 12 million downloads, and 1.2 million coming from China. So they are in the lead, leading US and Brazil, for instance. And these are permanent players, so they get in touch with our kind of sport. And this is a kind of a fan base we want to use. And we can also monetize at the end of the day because they are interested in our TV product and then later on in our PC game, which is comes close to flying a simulator.
Okay, Claire, so do you do anything similar with your events where you establish the audience first before you, you know, create the event? I'm interested in this sort of process of creating an event from the ground up, really.
Absolutely. So it kind of depends on if we're focusing on Disney and Marvel shows versus our motorsport shows. So for Disney and Marvel, obviously we have the benefit of working with them and finding out kind of market research from them on the character or property affinity in that market. So we kind of first see which properties or characters are the most popular there, as well as kind of how the movies have performed in that region. And then we work on creating a show with Disney with various characters or properties for that specific region. So right now we have 7 touring Disney on Ice shows that are specifically kind of created and placed throughout the world based off of what's going to work best for that market. In terms of motorsports, it's a little bit different. We try and get on air first, so we try and see if there is a connection with the market in terms of them being interested in our motorsports property, and then we bring the live event in, so similar to like a WWE format.
And you've spoken to me about merchandising and how concerns over sort of IP in different markets can be a bit of a problem.
Yep. So we sort of joke internally sometimes that we are a touring toy show as opposed to a Disney on Ice skating show sometimes because the merchandise is such an important part of our business. And as with anything kind of Disney-esque, you know, piracy and the authenticity of that merchandise is crucial. So we have a lot of challenges in getting the right permits for our vendors and battling with the legal vendors outside of our venues competing against us. But it's something that we take on board, and it's just something that we've got to work to show them how real and authentic our quality brand is versus what they're selling on the streets.
Okay. I when I was researching this panel discussion, and I'm probably going to put you on the spot a little bit here, but I found a quote from Wang Jianlin, who's the head of Dalian Wonder, and he said, when it comes to movies, Disney is our partner. When it comes to tourism, we are arch rivals. Of course, we want to smash them. What do you think about that?
It goes back to the content of Disney. I mean, as much as maybe they don't want to, they need Disney to, on the movie side of things, to fill their theaters and their cinemas. In reference to China, they've got the Shanghai parks there, so you know, they need that brand to fill that theme park. China has a lot of other various theme park competitors that are kind of going head-to-head with them now. But you know, it kind of goes back to the line of, you know, keep your friends close, but your enemies closer. At the end of the day, you need them to be successful. You need that brand.
Okay, Dong, do you want to say something about that? You know, Chinese brands versus Western brands. Do you think Chinese brands have a big advantage there?
I think Eric just mentioned that if you ever, you know, create your... In other words, if you want to do your business in China, you do want to be able to, you want to be identified with the local features in a sense. I mean, by talking about in your sport, actually, ideally a local hero will help you boost the sport itself. Like, and we saw that, you know, in many cases, especially in the NBA, for example, NBA itself, you know, really benefited a lot tremendously from Yao Ming's image there. And by the same token, when you do any, if you want to really do any, branch out your products or your, want to be successful in your merchandising, you really have to ideally find a local hero or a local person, even with any team as well. A local person, a local hero will help you really help your image and also help the market itself. And in other words, if you want to also reach out to really give your industry a big push, local features are very important. Yes, your brand could be international, the sport itself by the same token. I'm just saying, in any sense, it is international. It is really worldwide acknowledged. However, especially in China, with its own unique culture, tradition, and so forth, and the country itself is really so vast. So to have a local hero, to have local features there, are really important. Give Disney as an example, in Shanghai, it certainly has a lot of its own features. Yet, you mean you're very tight in terms of control, in terms of controlling copyrights, in terms of controlling merchandise and so forth. However, you know, some shows there do have the Chinese features there, Chinese elements there. I mean, yes, for that part, they're very successful, and Chinese kids, Chinese parents are very happy. I mean, this, again, is a typical example of reaching out, and also especially reaching the market of China, to have some local flavors.
Yeah. Talking of local flavors, Keith, a lot of Premier League clubs sign players from specific markets, and there is a business case behind doing that. Has Everton gone down that route?
Yes, it's been a popular method used by all the major clubs to try and improve the image and the visibility of their club in foreign territories. So lots of examples of the odd Chinese player. I don't mean the Chinese player being odd. I mean the occasional Chinese player, occasional Korean player, Chinese, Japanese, whatever. And yes, Everton's had its fair share of Eastern players, and it currently has a sponsor, which is a Thai beer company called Chang. And that may not be a brand familiar with you, unless you've been to Thailand, because the marketing objective of Chang was not to sell their product in the United Kingdom. It was to use the shirt advertising. You'll see all these guys with the names of brands to enhance the brand loyalty and visibility in its own home country, where it's the number two brand beer after Singer. So that was always a bit curious to me. They have no porridge rights at Everton, and the brand actually really doesn't appear here. But that's an idea, I think, as an indication of the true international flavour that is the consumer-led, but the content is football.
Okay, I want to open it up to the audience now. So are there any questions for the panel, please?
Thank you. A question for Mr. Wang. With the you know, so much interest in Chinese companies overseas, buying overseas into the European football market, buying football clubs, what is the position of Ali Sports for this?
Actually, in the past, it was rumored that our parent company, Alibaba Group, had an interest in the some European powerhouse and so forth. Of course, it has proven to be a rumor. I think we are, as I mentioned, you know, we're not just interested in endorsing or sponsoring. We're not just interested in buying something as a club to solve our issues or to quickly monetize. We're trying to be, as I used the word, disruptive. Try to perhaps, you know, team up with any interested parties, if you will, to create something with like a new IP or new you know, new content related tournament. As far as Ali Sports is concerned, I'm talking about my company. You know, event tournament or to create this kind of win-win situation. It doesn't have to be something that exists right now. It could be something newly invented related to any sport. However, it could draw, you know, a huge crowd, a market. The market value is there. Of course, I mean, eventually, it boils down essentially, you want to actually monetize. You want to make money. On the other hand, the benefits should not be ignored in any sense. I think that is our, so to speak, bottom line. We're not just interested in sponsoring. Sponsorship in the past, at the very beginning, might be our target, not anymore. We're interested in more so creating this teamwork to do things together, to create this win-win situation, and also to be beneficial to grassroots level people, if you will.
Could you see a scenario where Alibaba might buy a big European club?
Not for a while, not for the time being. I don't think it's going to happen immediately.
Any more questions? This lady here. just wait for the mic to get to you.
Hi, I'm Sarah from Germany, from EPS. I got a question. You were talking a lot about accessibility of sports, and I was wondering, how do you plan to involve young girls in sports in China, as they currently lack the confidence to join teams and organize sports?
Yeah. You're saying that Chinese females are lacking in confidence in joining?
As they often, for example, I watched a short documentary about a young 14-year-old girl who was the only girl of 50 guys in a basketball camp, and she tried talking other friends of her to join, but they often said felt uncomfortable in the situation.
That could be an extreme case. I don't think that, you know, in a way, Mao said in the past, of course, Chinese women are holding half of the sky. Of course, that might be an extreme line. On the other hand, Chinese women are really enjoying sport. I'm not here to be an advocate. I'm talking about the fact that in China, women are totally encouraged to be in sports. As a matter of fact, I believe physicality-wise, Chinese women probably are more good at sports in a way and more easy to catch up with the rest of the world. I'll give you an example. When I was in Rio for the Olympics, the Chinese women's volleyball team did so well as a team event. They actually won the Olympic gold medals there. If you talk about collective sports in China, mostly in all these professional leagues in China, men's and women's leagues are definitely behind men's because of the fact that they're not doing too well. However, there is only one league, Chinese league, which is totally ahead in terms of women's sport. That is Chinese women's volleyball. Not only because of their winning huge in Rio, but also in the past because of the traditional. So Chinese women are really strongly encouraged to join individual sports, team sports also. I think that what you cited probably was an extreme example.
I was more thinking about mass participation for young girls, not the success. Obviously, we all know China is very successful.
Even so, at a very grassroots level, they actually are encouraged to do, because of the system itself in the past, which was very, very similar to that of Russia or former USSR. At a very young age, they probably could be selected to be trained at a local, we call it junior sports academy, sports school. I mean, men and women, girls and boys, they do the same thing.
Ben, could I just add a couple of words? Have you spent time in China? Okay. The one thing that surprised me probably more than anything is that there is a vast number of ladies who are the entrepreneurs behind some of the fastest growing businesses, which is, there's no reason why it shouldn't be, but it's just something that we don't think of. Most of the entrepreneurs, the leading industrialists over the past 100, 200 years in Western environments have been men. So there were two things that have surprised me about China. One is the vast number of ladies that have been successful in building and running businesses. That's one I think you should take some encouragement from. And the other is the extraordinarily young men that are put in places of quite high responsibility in Chinese companies. So I get a lot of visits from Chinese people coming over looking to buy football clubs. And quite often I'm waiting for the father to arrive. And he said, no, it's me. And they were very, very young men, very young men. So I think it's a young country that's coming forth. So I think you would expect to see more lady sportsmen developing from that.
Okay, we've run out of time. One more question, so gentleman up here.
Hi, thank you. Kulvir Ranger from Atos. We are the official IT provider for the IOC, and I'm responsible for our brand in the UK. But interesting to hear the panel. A question I have to you is technology, because you've been talking about content, and we know that this is all about people looking to generate content, whether it be through media, sport, to provide the entertainment, but delivery of that content, and where do you see technology taking us in terms of how that content is then delivered?
Eric, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, we have wide variety of content in this, that respect. We are dealing, or we are practicing now, or introducing the 360 degrees camera. We are also going to work closely together with our technology partners in order to make a second screen with all the details we get from our so-called black box, where we are lively controlling the planes, not controlling but surveying, and means that we get some 50 data. This is the G load in all aspects. The climb, the dive, the engine data, and we can transfer into our mobile game, in our PC game, and this we are giving access to all our fans, to the very young audience we have. We have, let's say, most of our fans or our viewers are younger than 49 years old, and younger, of course. And we are also experimenting with the virtual reality, which is going to be available next year. So we have a wide variety in all these aspects, and we are growing this kind of business also.
Okay, I'm conscious I'm keeping people from their lunch now, so I think we're going to tie it up there. The panel are going to be available for your questions afterwards, so please make your way to the front if you want to ask them anything else. Thanks very much to our panel, everybody.